I'd like to welcome everyone to today's press call on local government's newfound role in dealing with immigration policy. Today's press call is hosted by ICMA, the International City-County Management Association, in conjunction with the organization's 103rd annual conference, which is being held in San Antonio. Assembled media are currently in a listen-only mode, and after hearing from each of our speakers, we will have a Q&A portion and provide instructions for how to ask a question at that time. Now, I'd like to turn the call over to Ron Carley, who is the moderator of today's discussion. Ron?
Thank you, Michael, and welcome to our conference call today. This is Ron Carley. I'm former city manager of Charlotte, North Carolina and Arlington, Virginia. I'm currently a visiting assistant professor at Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia. We have a panel assembled for you today with experience dealing with immigration at the local level. We come to you, as Michael Earl said, from San Antonio at the ICMA conference, where we're gathering under the theme of building bridges, looking at how county and city managers, assistants and deputies, and other local government professionals can come together in their communities to connect with their community and their different communities within the local governments across not only the United States, but across the world. We're focused on the issue in this call on immigration in the U.S., an issue that has been with cities literally from the beginning, and an issue that has received a considerable amount of attention and even concern in recent months. We thank you very much for joining us for this call, and I'm going to have each of our speakers introduce themselves to you so you can familiarize yourself with their voices and to hear from their own words their affiliation for this call. And then we'll do a second round where they'll talk a little bit more about their experience with immigration and their observations, concerns, and hopes as we move forward trying to build bridges in our community. So first, let me turn to Rosalind Gold.
Hi, this is Rosalind Gold. I'm Senior Director of Policy Research and Advocacy with the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, NALEO Educational Fund. Our mission at the NALEO Educational Fund is to facilitate full Latino participation in the American political process. And our constituency includes the more than 6,100 Latino elected and appointed officials nationwide, including city officials who are very much on the front lines of dealing with immigration issues in our nation.
Good morning. I'm Veronica Briceño. I'm the president of the Local Government Hispanic Network, an affiliate organization of the International City-County Management Association. We are an organization that represents Latinos and Hispanics that work in the city management profession, as well as communities that have an interest in serving the Latino population within their communities. We have served as a resource for folks that are looking on information on how to better serve immigrant communities as they're coming into cities around the country.
Good morning. My name is Milton Dahoney, Jr. I'm the Assistant City Manager for the City of Phoenix, Arizona. We are currently the fifth largest city in the United States with a population of 1.6 million people. We have a very diverse community that is at present a minority-majority community. So immigration and assimilating all into our community so that they can be productive citizens is something that we're about.
So, as you have found from our introductions, we have a representative of local elected officials, a representative of professional appointed officials, as well as a representative of local government itself. So let's do a second round and provide each of our speakers an opportunity to share with you what their current observations are on the issue of immigration in U.S. and specifically immigration within our local governments. Rosalind, what's the perspective from the elected officials?
Oh, we understand that the success and future prosperity and well-being of our nation is dependent on the success of our nation's immigrant families. Right now, about one out of every seven U.S. residents, so there are 44 million of our nation's residents are foreign-born. And projections say that by 2065, close to one out of six will be foreign-born, and another 18% of our nation's residents will be children of immigrants. So by 2065, over one-third of our nation will either be foreign-born or immigrant families. So again, for our nation to be prosperous and for the future of our nation's well-being, cities have to work to ensure the success of immigrant families. And it's also important to note that immigrants make invaluable contributions to their cities. They pay taxes, they're consumers who have enormous spending power. They bring diverse skills to the workforce. In cities that have aging native-born workforces, immigrant workers can help reinvigorate economies. They also start businesses which employ native and foreign-born workers. So when cities work to integrate immigrants fully into their civic and economic life, they are not only promoting the success of the immigrant families, but of all the families in their cities.
And Veronica, from the standpoint of professional appointed officials across local governments, what are the observations that your organization is seeing?
So our organization, as we're working with issues that impact the Hispanic community, immigration is one of the largest. We feel, or members of our organization feel like folks that are in our cities, that live in our cities and reside in our cities, we need to provide them services, city services, as we would provide to anybody else. So it's a concern of being able to continue to provide those services, making these individuals feel safe in our communities. And it's also a personal issue because so many of our organization are Latino and have some might be immigrants themselves or have family and friends that are immigrants. And so it touches home as well, something that many members of our organization are very passionate about for that reason.
So what is suggested by your comments, Veronica, is this tension not just relative to the immigrant community in general, but specifically for those without documentation and the potential for services being cut off to them. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes, that's correct. I think that in city management, we feel compelled to provide services, city services, no matter what. And so it's that balance of being able to provide those services without having undocumented individuals feel that they're at threat or at risk for coming to the city for assistance.
Thank you. So for the people on the conference call, one of the things we learned very early when you study local government is that literally every city and county and town is different, truly unique, and it makes studying local government very difficult. And so we're going to hear from Milton Dahoney from Phoenix, and Phoenix is its own unique case, but many of the issues that have surfaced in Phoenix have surfaced across multiple local governments in this country. But to some extent, Phoenix has almost been ground zero in immigration issues for going on a decade. Milton, what are you seeing in Phoenix these days, and how do the issues that Veronica has raised play out in Phoenix?
Well, I think that there is some level of ongoing tension within the community around the notion of immigration, but the focus within the local government is our role is to cultivate a welcoming and inclusive community. We're very aggressive about economic growth. We recruit companies from around the world, and those companies, a lot of them tech companies that have located in Phoenix, are looking for worldwide talent. And so from that perspective, they're looking for immigrants to come to the city to work for them. They're looking for talent that's native-born to Arizona. So in the midst of the issues that are certainly swimming around the country, we try to find a way to make the community work in a cohesive fashion day in and day out.
Yesterday, the attendees at the ICMA conference heard from Richard Florida, and he was talking about three critical elements for successful cities today. And they are technology, talent, and the third one, which you talked about considerably, is tolerance. I'd like to go around one more time before we open up to questions to our panelists and ask you about that question of tolerance. There is a sense in some areas of increasing intolerance at the national level, especially with those without immigration status. And, of course, there's been challenges to cities that have either proclaimed themselves to be sanctuary cities or who have been proclaimed by others to be sanctuary cities. So how do local governments deal with the need to create a tolerant environment as part of the recipe for success in this larger context of discussion that's going on across the country? And let me go in reverse order, because you've been living it on the ground, Milton. And has Phoenix been threatened by the federal government or by your state government?
We have paid closer attention to regulations coming out of the federal government around what it takes to receive federal funding. And the majority of our city council has indicated that there are just certain things that we won't do as a condition of accepting that money. And then within the state environment, there are sometimes challenges to local authority on issues. But in trying to determine what's worked, we've looked at our policies and our practices and tried to provide clarity to the community so they know what they can expect from local government in terms of service delivery, particularly the delivery of police services.
Veronica, how are your members reacting to the situation, and do you get any sense of fear among members of your organization?
It's certainly a balance amongst members of our organization. We, as Milton spoke to just now, cities are having to balance the desire to serve the residents of their cities, but at the same time, they don't want to put themselves in threat of losing federal funding or state funding even in some cases, which is crucial, obviously, to a city's health and economic well-being. So it's a very fine line, and it's a balance because cities, I believe, do want to make sure that the folks that reside in their communities feel welcome in their communities.
Thank you. And Rosalyn, I think by the nature of your organization and the members, they are people who are actively promoting tolerance within local governments. How are they holding up in reacting to the current environment?
Well, it's very much a challenge. On the one hand, elected officials who have successfully built and moved forward with immigrant integration policies have already tried to lay a foundation of not only providing immigrant families with the tools they need to be successful, but to educate longtime residents and native families about building positive relationships between immigrants and longtime residents. So they are, on one hand, working to strengthen that foundation, to keep that momentum going, because to instill trust in a community, both the immigrant community and for longtime residents, when people know each other, when they meet families, when they meet people in their communities, they really build relationships that make them understand the contributions of immigrants. On the other hand, many of our elected leaders are very angry right now about the tone and the tenor of the current administration and the disrespect that it is showing to immigrants and their contributions. And they are working with their cities and with their states to come up with strategies to fight back.
Thank you very much. Michael, would you explain to our listeners how they can ask questions, please?
Sure. And Leo, can you chime in, the operator, to make sure that that listeners have the proper instructions for asking a question and joining the queue?
Absolutely. If you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 now on your touchtone phone. That is star 1 on your touchtone phone. One moment while we queue. And once again, that is star one to ask a question. We'll take our first question from David Nitzepper of Route 50. Your line is open.
Thanks, guys, for putting on this this call. My question is, hopefully I can start with Milton, but I'm interested in getting everybody's input. You mentioned that police services was one area where you're really trying to help residents get clarity on what level of service delivery they can expect from cities. So I'm curious, what advice would you give to other cities dealing with these issues about how to make that information clear, and what policies might you encourage other cities to implement in order to give residents, and particularly immigrant residents, peace of mind?
One of the things that we have done in Phoenix is to establish a contractual relationship with various school systems. We place school resource officers in a number of the schools, and it was important for us to have clarity around the protocols of how the officers would conduct themselves in trying to build relationships with the students. So, for example, our officers do not ask students questions about the documented status of their parents or people living in their household. The feeling is that would compromise the building of a trusting relationship between the officer and the students. Also, we recently made a change to our police operations order to provide guidance to officers around the proper protocol when they make a traffic stop. And we shared that information with members of the community as well, so that it takes any question of profiling or trying to put ourselves in the place of ICE. We are not a federal immigration enforcement agency, and we don't purport to be one.
Anybody else want to comment on that question?
We know that law enforcement officials at the city level across the nation are highlighting the fact that they have policies and educate the community about the fact that, indeed, they are not federal law enforcement officials. They are also working to educate policymakers about the reasons why it's important that local law enforcement officials make local law enforcement a priority. Having to be an enforcer or a federal immigration enforcement official diverts resources away from the public safety concerns of local governments. It also creates enormous mistrust between the community and local officials, so that immigrants are afraid to report crimes or be witnesses to crimes, and that just makes it harder for local law enforcement officials to do their jobs. So they are very much working to assure community residents about what their role is, but also educate policymakers about the need to stay with local law enforcement activities.
So it is an issue of trust, which Rosalind hit on right there. It's important for the law enforcement agents to establish trust within communities, and that's done in many ways. Our organization is concerned of the fact that immigrants, undocumented immigrants, might be victims of crime or witnesses of crime and might not report it because of that lack of trust. For that reason, it's important for law enforcement to be trained and being sensitive to diversity and different cultures, different individuals that live in our communities. It's important for law enforcement agents to reflect the communities that they serve. It's important for law enforcement agencies to be diverse themselves in their officers that are on the street. And it's important to have tools to speak the various languages of the immigrant communities. Our organization is focused on Latino community, but obviously there's other immigrant communities that speak many languages, and it's important to have those resources within cities so that we can communicate with our citizens. That's one of the very first steps to establishing trust.
This is one of the areas where I think there is a tremendous amount of confusion and misunderstanding. I've had people ask, well, what other federal laws do local police not enforce? And there's a long list of federal laws that local police do not enforce. Immigration law itself is highly complicated. The different kinds of status that a person can have really does take someone trained in immigration law to understand who is appropriate in the community and who isn't and for what reasons and where they are in the process. And as to federal laws that local government and local police do not enforce, the one that immediately comes to mind is tax law. You know, most cities probably have one or two tax cheats, but when someone gets pulled over, local police don't ask to see their income tax returns. And so why is it that we should be asking for other federal records as well when, as our speakers have identified, what the local police need to be doing is establishing a level of trust so that when crime happens, it's reported, and people who are a witness to crime feel safe in sharing what they know and being involved in stopping it. Otherwise, we're creating an environment where crime can run rapid and people can be exploited. And that doesn't work out constructively or positively for anyone in any community. Do we have other questions?
We do. We have a question from Joel Vernile of Cronkite News.
Hi. Milton spoke about things that local law enforcement would not do as a threat to federal funding, and I was wondering what those things were.
If I understood your question correctly around federal funding, so we have an internal process that reviews all federal NOFAs that come in outlining what's required in order to get the grant. So if there was a requirement that we would become supplementary to ICE going on raids, trying to round people up for deportation, those kinds of things, those are not activities that it's our role to play. And the majority of city councils indicated that that's not a role they want us to play. So we would not get involved in doing those kinds of things as a condition of going after federal dollars. That's not to say we don't interact at times with federal law enforcement officials, but our role is to serve the local community, and that is what we're trying to do. And so, as the prior speakers indicated, we're trying to build trust, because for us to solve criminal matters, we need information from the public. If they are afraid to call us because they think we're going to subsequently deport them or take those kinds of actions, it creates mistrust, and therefore it has a negative impact on our ability to maintain a safe community.
Other questions?
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 on your touch tone telephone. We'll take our next question from Nikki Papadogiannakis of Voice of America.
Hi. Thank you for having this call. I just wanted to ask, how do you as local law enforcement officials and just local officials in general work with other districts or cities in your funding areas that you have to work with for various reasons, who have differing policies, possibly less tolerant policies, or if that is even the case, kind of how that situation arises. And then if you could talk a bit more about the line between ICE and your local services. Obviously, you were saying that there are many things that ICE does that you can't do, or federal enforcement does that you can't do. But I'm sure there's definitely interaction there. If you could talk about how those interactions are how those maybe impact your ability to as local officials. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that question. So the first one is, how do local governments work with one another and other organizations? Rosalind, Veronica, both of you provide a network for local officials to come together. How do local officials work with one another and across jurisdictions?
I think it varies, obviously, on the community, type of community, the relationships that are involved. But I think it's just, as with anything else in a region, local officials are working very closely together to ensure as seamless as possible services are being provided, communities are feeling safe, and so forth. So I know, for example, where I'm at in Austin, Texas, we have several surrounding communities and jurisdictions, and it's a constant communication, constant informing each other of policies and procedures that are in place, so that we're trying to be as continuous as possible.
And we work with Latino elected and appointed officials nationwide, and we bring them together for policy institutes where they have an opportunity to share best practices in their communities. And so those opportunities allow them to learn skills and approaches to dealing with cross-regional issues. Part of it is already having a relationship with that county or with that city and having that foundation in place. So when there are conflicts or there are differences, you have a relationship where you can talk about it and look at how you can work things out together to find a solution that works for the entire region.
So that was Rosalind, preceded by Veronica. I think it's important to point out, as I said earlier, every local government is different. And the extent to which one city or another has an explicit policy of being welcoming and really embracing its immigrant community or not definitely varies across the U.S. Phoenix, in particular, and their city council has taken some courageous stands with regard to their commitment to being a welcoming community. So, Milton, could you address the first question? Feel free to, but also into the second question about ICE and the relationship between ICE and the local government.
So relative to the first question on working with other jurisdictions, for the most part, when there is some kind of joint multi-jurisdictional operation, immigration protocols don't really come into play, because typically when different law enforcement agencies are pooled together, it's because they are looking for a specific person who has committed a crime, a person who's wanted by either state, federal, or local officials for criminal activity. And I can say without doubt, in 100% of the cases, if we're looking for a criminal, we're going to be involved. Their documented status is irrelevant. We will help to pursue them. With regards to the interaction with ICE, so here's a practical example of what we won't do. So we make a traffic stop, and through determining who the person is that's in the car, if in communication with federal officials, if that's warranted, we will only hold that person for a reasonable amount of time. We won't just say we're going to take the person into custody for hours and hours waiting on federal officials to show up. That's not how the protocol works. So, again, we are not trying to supplement ourselves or replace what we do day-to-day in customer interactions as if we are federal officials. We have very distinct lines that we don't cross, and we communicate those in all directions. And I'll say again, having your community clearly understand how you will deliver public safety services and other services allows them to know how to traverse and function in your community, and we think that's appropriate.
There's a really important point that Milton made there that I don't want to be lost, and that is the commitment to communities like Phoenix, who have been very out in front and being welcoming and trying to provide some protections for all of their citizens. There's no suggestion that the city will not cooperate with federal officials in pursuit of a person who has committed criminal acts. Being a sanctuary city, whether adopted by that city or put on the city by someone else, doesn't mean giving sanctuary to people who are wanted for criminal activity. It's related to the civil issue around immigration, not the criminal activity. And sometimes it gets portrayed, I think, in a way that is a very much a misperception, a mischaracterization of what local governments are trying to do as they walk a very, very high tightrope these days. Back to questions.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. One moment while we queue. And it appears that we have no further questions at this time. I'd be happy to return the call over to you.
All right. Thank you very much. So what we'd like to do at this time is one more round with our speakers and give them an opportunity to make any final comments or observations or underscore any of the other points that they have made, and we'll give an opportunity for any last questions, but if there are none, these will be our wrap-up statements. So I'll ask the speakers who would like to go first. And Veronica smiled, and that means yes.
I drew the short stick. No extensive final observations. Just thank you for the opportunity. Enjoy being a part of this conversation. It's an important and timely conversation in our country and in our communities, and something that's not being lost amongst our local government leaders. And it's really where the rubber hits the road and where we're implementing and trying to make our communities feel as safe as possible for everyone who resides in them.
Immigration is a complicated topic. It's one that I think we will continue to struggle with as time goes forward. Local communities have an opportunity to carve out what their policies and practices are going to be based on their local community values. And if a community hasn't gone through that process, I would encourage them to do so.
One important point when we think about building bridges and integrating immigrant into our communities is to also understand that immigrants are vital to the future of the civic life and the democracy of their cities. And right now there are about 8.6 million legal permanent residents nationwide who have not yet become U.S. citizens. Many of them are eager to embrace naturalization, but they haven't initiated the process because they need assistance with learning English or the application and the materials to become a U.S. citizen. Cities can work with their adult education providers, their libraries, their literacy programs, their community colleges to help provide good English language learning and civics programs. They can promote the opportunities of citizenship and naturalization. And one of the other things we know is that when Latino and Asian legal permanent residents become U.S. citizens, they actually vote at higher rates and participate at higher rates than their native-born counterparts. So immigrants are not only key to the future of the economic prosperity of cities, but also to the vitality of their democracies, and cities can play an important role in promoting and assisting naturalization. Thank you.
Thank you, all three. Do we have any last questions from our listeners?
Once again, press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. One moment, please. And we do. We have a question from Diana Solis of the Dallas Morning News. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. I have a question for Ms. Gold, on the increased participation, voter participation rates for Latino and Asian immigrants who naturalize. Could you detail that a little bit more? How much more significant is it?
Well, it ranges from election to election, and if you would like, I can actually follow up with you to provide some numbers on the differences for the last couple of presidential elections. But it's a couple of percentage points in terms of the percent of eligible naturalized citizens who vote.
Okay, great. That'd be great. Thank you.
Any other question?
It appears we have no further questions.
Great. Well, thank you all so much for joining us and for your interest in the issue of immigration and for your interest in ICMA, the International City County Management Association, which brings together professional managers across the cities, counties, and towns in the U.S. trying to promote professional leadership in our local governments. On behalf of ICMA, again, thank you very much for joining us. We look forward to working with you in the future, and please let any of our panelists know if you have additional questions after the call.